Welcome to the Third Gold Podcast. My name is Eric Hansen. He's not Tyler James. He's Tom Lemming, our special guest, even though it says Tyler James right under his label there. We're a couple minutes late. Tom was kind enough to join us in transit. We're going to talk about Notre Dame football recruiting today, break down the 2026 class, look ahead a little bit to 2027. And we're also going to take your questions live. Tom has been covering recruiting since, he told me the other night, 1978/1979. So did you start in 78 and then quit and then resume in 79? Or you just don't remember?
No, I took my first trip in October of 78. I interviewed players, Jerry Faust at Moeller High School and Dan Marino at Central Catholic High School in Pittsburgh. But I didn't come out in my first newsletter, which was actually six pages stapled together to make it 12, until 79. So I did my work in 78 and it came out in 79. So that was my first full year.
Okay. Well, let's talk about this class in general terms first, before we break it down. 27 signees. Rivals industry ranking had it number two. I think you had them number three, the Irish.
No, they are number two when you look at it number wise, to be honest. They could actually be number one if it was number wise, but USC had, I think, nine more players signed than them. So if you compare the whole class like that, but Notre Dame's either number two or number three based on how many ball players they've signed. It's their best class in years.
And we talked about that. We did a story. You helped me with a story. We did a historical perspective. The 1990 class is the one that really stands out. You thought there were a couple others that are kind of in this realm. The 2003 class with Brady Quinn, and the 2008 class, the Dane Chris, Michael Floyd, Kyle Rudolph class. What is it about this class that makes it so outstanding?
It's a complete class. They've got talent coming at every single position. Noah Grubbs at quarterback. They got two outstanding running backs. Finally got some really good wide receivers coming in, guys that have speed and have already proven themselves as productive wide receivers in high school, not just projections. They got the number one tight end in the country. They've got some very good offensive linemen coming in. A couple of them from Pennsylvania really liked, and a trio from Michigan, also very good. And they've always struggled along the defensive line in the past, but they have a couple of very good defensive ends coming in from North Carolina. And hopefully the defensive tackles like Tiki Hola from Texas and Elijah Golden from Florida are going to be also ball players that you can count on, because Notre Dame's weakness, you can tell this year, it's the kicking game, but also defensive tackles when they play elite teams. And if they do make the playoffs and they do play some really good teams, the pass rush is going to be very important. And I think it's going to be really helped an awful lot next year with these five defensive linemen coming in.
Tom's going to take some questions from you guys live. We'll work them in a little bit later. We're going to do a little bit of a breakdown first, but go ahead and start submitting them into the question portal, and then we'll be able to get to your questions and work them into our conversation. One big piece of breaking news that happened this morning, Tom, while you were getting business done, was that Mike Singer, my colleague at blueandgold.com, broke that Teddy Girard is likely going to or strongly considering reclassifying into the 2026 class. So they'd have two quarterbacks in this class. I'm wondering which of those two quarterbacks you like better, and what do you think are the positives and possibly consequences of that?
Well, I like them both. Noah's got pretty good stats this year. Teddy's stats weren't too bad either. I think he completed 64% of his passes, which is good. And he plays better competition in the Atlanta area. I like them both. Teddy's got great size. I saw Teddy this past January, so almost a year ago, he came to my thing, and Notre Dame didn't really know about him at all. He had a couple of offers, but I liked his size, his potential. And when I talked to other coaches that have played against him, I immediately gave him a four-star plus rating when I saw him. And a lot of times when I rate ball players, it's mainly a collective opinion. And I had that on Teddy. And then a few months later, Notre Dame checked him out and really liked him and were able to get him in. And I think with Walton, the running back, and if they can get a couple other great Atlanta area players, they'll be doing fantastic. But I like both of them. And I would imagine once they get there and one of them shows that he's a little bit better than the other one will transfer. That's been the norm when it comes to quarterback recruiting. So it's good to have two come in 1 year and let the chips fall where they may.
How do you think those two compare to Blake Hebert, who's already on campus and who's been the scout team quarterback most of the games this year?
I think they're both a little bit better than Blake. Blake's a good ball player. He was the top quarterback in the East when he came out, first in Massachusetts, then in Connecticut. But I think these two might have slightly a little bit better potential than Blake does. But again, it's apples and oranges when it comes to quarterbacks. And a lot of times it's just how you take the training from Geno. Geno is an outstanding quarterback coach and does a really good job of developing ball players. And then Mike DeBoard as an offensive coordinator. So whoever is the guy that actually takes the reins from C.J. Carr in a couple of years will definitely be a guy that's done his work and has proven that he can be a big-time quarterback.
So when we're talking about, you know, comparing this team to one in history, why do you think Notre Dame was this successful? Why do you think they were able to put together a top-five class when it was so elusive? Brian Kelly got a lot of top 10, top 12 classes. What was different about this recruiting cycle?
It looks like it was a collective thing, too. It wasn't just Marcus. It was the assistant coaches, the in-house people. Mike Martin, the new general manager, I think does a great job in recruiting. And also he'll do a great job when it comes to transfer portal. But I do think it was everything. Marcus has built, and he's now already one of the biggest names. A lot of it comes from being head coach at Notre Dame, but also a lot of it comes from getting to the national title game last year. And I think Marcus also is a hands-on type recruiter with the ball players. They all respect him, and once he gets into the house, I think it's awfully tough for a player to turn him down. I think he is a younger version of Rockne, Leahy, and Parsegian in my mind. I think he's he stays at Notre Dame for 10 to 15 years. You're going to see some great games and some great years. And I imagine a couple of national titles also. But I think Marcus leads the way. Mike Martin is right behind him. And then you got guys like Mike Mickens, the defensive back coach, who's the best in the country now as a DB coach. I think Juwan Seidler, it may be the best running back coach in the country when it comes to combination of coaching and recruiting. They're two very, very good at recruiters and coaches. And I do think that they've got a very good overall staff at Notre Dame. Mike Denbrock has proven himself to be a great offensive coordinator who led the nation in offense a couple of years, I think, at LSU and developed a Heisman Trophy winner. And Chris Ash did a great job at Ohio State when they won a national title, and he did a great job at Notre Dame this year. So they've got a complete staff right now, and I think that's something that Brian Kelly lacked. Definitely something that Tyrone Willingham lacked and Bob Davey lacked and Charlie Weiss lacked. And I think he hadn't had a complete staff really since Lou Holtz's first couple of years at Notre Dame.
We're getting a few questions about the college football playoff. If we have time, we'll answer those at the end, including a super chat. But I appreciate the questions, but we want to really focus on recruiting in this podcast. And we'll have all kinds of talk after the and I'm going to have a live chat tomorrow if you guys want to talk college football playoff and so forth. The sustainability of this class, I mean, that they're living in such a different world now. It was really interesting to hear Mike Martin talk yesterday about how they put valuation on certain players and how negotiations go. And it was our first kind of peek into that process. When you're out talking to kids and you travel all over the country, how many states do you go to?
I do 48 states a year. I'll go to Hawaii 3, 4, 5 years. And I don't need to go to Alaska anymore. I went there in 2010 when CBS wanted me to cover all 50 states, but there really, really isn't much going on. football wise, a lot of eight man football, but I haven't seen a power forward type player come out of Alaska in years.
Okay. So when you're doing your travels, are you getting the sense from kids that Notre Dame is a player in the NIL space, that they are able to be at least competitive with the money that they're able to offer, which is a reality in recruiting these days? I mean, it's legal and it's necessary.
Yeah, well, this is the first year I can actually say, yes, they're a player in the NIL. I didn't think so in the past couple of years, but I do think this year, I don't know if they got the money they got for being in the national title game. They don't have to share it with a conference. That might have helped. I don't know how they get their money. Notre Dame is a very wealthy school, but a lot of times there's a lot of reasons why they weren't competitive a couple of years ago, and they are now. But I do think that as long as they're competitive NIL, Notre Dame's going to have a great recruiting class because they've got Marcus Freeman and they've got a very good all-around staff. So I think that's really important. But you're right. Things have changed the last few years. So you got to stay on top of recruiting. The players are now getting paid. What I've noticed, too, is unusual that Notre Dame didn't have anybody leave this year. Last year they had Deuce
Martin,
safety from Florida. They had the defensive lineman from Alabama. And this year they didn't really have anybody leave. So Mike Martin did a tremendous job of keeping this whole group together, because a lot of the other schools they had a lot of problems keeping their players. And because what's happening, what I've noticed now is a lot of the players have street agents as their agent. And the guys that maybe sometimes 7-on-7 coaches that are talking to them say, well, it's good to commit now. And then once you commit, we'll start dealing with the other schools to see if you're going to stay here or you're going to move on, if someone's going to give you more money. There's a lot of that wheeling and dealing going on, talking to the ball players. And what's been unusual for me when I meet ball players now is that sometimes they'll have a representative with them when I meet with them. All I do is do the football interview, have them fill out a questionnaire, take their pictures, talk to them a little bit. And the representative is almost like a lawyer, even though they're not lawyers, standing right there. Well, don't answer that or don't do this. And that's unusual for me. I've been doing this 47 years and haven't had that problem until the last year or two.
All right. So, I'm going to ask you a few kind of rapid fire questions about the class before we get into some specifics. We may take a run through the question queue real quick to work a few of those in while it refills. But what I wanted to ask you, Tom, first of all, who do you feel like was the biggest catch in this class? Who was the recruit that really impresses you the most?
Well, you know, that's a good question. There's so many of them. I would say it might be one of the two defensive ends, because that's where they really need help along the defensive line. The best athlete could be Ian Primmer, the tight end. I had him meet me out in Manhattan, Kansas a year ago, and I was surprised. Super long arms. He's almost 6'6". He really impressed me. I didn't know much about him because players from Kansas don't get the kind of publicity as players from Los Angeles or Chicago or Miami or places like that. But I was really impressed with him. Although I do think that the one that's got to impress you the most, as I said, defensive lineman, and with Fields leaving this year, one of the wide receivers, Finley, is outstanding. He plays against great competition, won a state title in Texas, and has the bloodlines with his dad, who was one of my All-Americans also a few years ago, Jermichael. So I would go to Ian Primmer as a tight end, even though Notre Dame's got really – Flanagan's a great tight end, both Flanagan's at Notre Dame. But I think Primmer might be the best athlete. But I think the most important would be their pass rushing defensive ends, Dunham, both defensive ends from North Carolina.
Who would be your sleeper in this class?
It's such a good class. I would say it'd be one of the offensive linemen, perhaps the kid from Connecticut, who no one even knew about until coaches found out at Notre Dame and really liked him a lot. I would have to be one of the offensive linemen, because offensive linemen also are the toughest to really evaluate and see how they're going to improve when they get to college. And a lot of times it comes down to coaching. I would have to say one of the offensive linemen, particularly the guy from Connecticut.
And that's Charlie Thom from Darien, Connecticut, 6'7", 270. And he was, way off the radar, and then Notre Dame found him. How about Recruiter of the Year? Which of the assistants do you feel like did the best job?
It's got to be Mike Mickens. He's got 2 5-star DBs coming in, and he's got all the DBs are good. I saw Chasen Smith at 2 different schools in Tennessee over the last 2.5 years. I was really impressed with him, and he's not getting much publicity because they got so many other good DBs heading their way, including Pouncey from Orlando. All of them are big, big-time guys. And then he's done such a great job, you forget about some. Look at Ethan Long. He dominated the Syracuse game, and yeah, no one really talked about him, but he was always a good ball player coming out of the prep schools in Connecticut. So Mike Mickens has done a great job. And also, I think Juwan Seidler, you got to also talk about him with the running backs. He's got 2 outstanding running backs coming in. And I think next year you're going to see even probably better running backs coming. That's how good he is as a recruiter. So I was really impressed with both those guys. And I knew Juwan at Penn State had done a great job also before he got to Notre Dame. Matter of fact, he had the #1 running back for next year already committed when he was at Penn State. And Kamon Spell could wind up at Notre Dame next year. So those are the two coaches that you really have to give a lot of credit to. Although I think the entire staff did a great job this year. Mike Denbrock, who's the offensive coordinator, brought in 2 outstanding tight ends also. So all these guys did a great job. As I said, it's a group win for the coaching staff. You can't really just say one guy. And obviously Marcus is the figurehead. He's the leader of the group, and all these other guys have really come along. And I think Marcus, because Notre Dame always had a struggle with coaches over the past 30 years, not doing their job. Some guys just getting to Notre Dame, the Green Bay Packer head coach came as a quarterback coach. I don't remember him doing a whole lot of recruiting. He was already looking to go to the NFL, guys like that. But now these guys really are set. They're not only coaches, but they're recruiters. And that's what makes a great staff. And Urban Meyer had told me that. Pete Carroll had told me that. Nick Saban had told me that. That no matter how good of a coach you are, you win with recruiting. And you win with coaches that know how to go out there and get their ball players at their particular position. 5 stars at each position. That's what you got to do. And I remember Nick Saban. I had recommended a recruiting coordinator to him. And when he got to Alabama 1 year, he won the national title. They won their recruiting national title, and Nick still fired him the next year. I didn't think it was good enough. So I did like you the way he goes about it. And Urban's exactly like Nick Saban, as was Pete Carroll. All these ultra successful coaches know what it takes to win. You need a full staff that recruits on a daily basis, not just recruiting in December and January and playing golf the other 10 months. You got to go out there and recruit all year. You got to build relationships. When these ball players are sophomores, by the time they're seniors, they're looking at you, especially if you're one of the Super 16 schools like a Notre Dame is, with such great tradition and publicity that the school engenders. So I do think that it's a whole staff thing, and you got to compliment this year's staff at Notre Dame. They did a great job.
Okay. We are going to reward some of our people for showing up here and do a few questions, and we'll get back into our discussion. A lot of these have to do with the 2027 class. So let me remind people, Notre Dame just signed 27 players in the 2026 class. They have 7 commitments so far in the 2027 class. That's quarterback Teddy Girard. You have offensive lineman James Halter, safety Khalil Terry, linebacker Amari Irvin. We have another linebacker, Ellis McGaskin. Defensive lineman Richie Flanagan, who is James Flanagan's younger brother and Jim Flanagan's son. And then we have Sean Kraft, who's a long snapper. So let's get to those 2027 questions. And let's go with Beef Eater. Eric, could we ask Tom who he thinks the #1 target should be in the 2027 class?
I would go with Kamon Spell, the running back from the Pittsburgh area, McKeesport, just because they're losing 2 great running backs after this year, even though Williams is looking good. I do think that Kamon Spell would be the guy. And also, the defensive lineman from Atlanta who had visited Notre Dame, I'm trying to remember his name. He's my #1 player, I should remember, Jacobs. And I do think that he would be maybe – I would actually go because they need more help along the defensive line, but I think Jacobs would be the guy that they would probably have to zoom in on. And Notre Dame's got a good shot at him because he came in. He's friends with the Girard family and the Walton family. And I do think that this would be Al Washington's big, big catch if he could land him, you know, his first five-star defensive lineman. And I do think that he is, and I've seen him since his freshman year. He's a big-time guy, and I'll be meeting him again in January. So I would go with him, or either him or Kamon Spell.
And Jacobs is an interior guy?
No, he's a defensive end.
Okay, gotcha.
But defensive tackles, which is also, you're right, I've been looking and looking. I don't think they've had a five-star defensive tackle since Steve Niehaus 52 years ago, 53 years ago. Really, that's how they've struggled with great defense. You know, Lewis Nix was a four-star. Chris Zorch was a linebacker. Some of the great ones they've had. Stephon Tuitt was a defensive end. But bringing in a defensive tackle has always been probably the toughest thing for Notre Dame to do recruiting-wise. And there's some pretty good ones out there now. And there's another one that's only going to be a junior this coming year, Bone Crusher from Chicago.
Yeah.
And you know,
I love him, Caleb Tucker.
Great talent. He's been offered by every school in the country. He's from Chicago, Mount Carmel. And Notre Dame struggled in Chicago the last several years for some reason. I don't know, especially the Catholic League. They should be doing much better than they do, but they seem to lose. Justin Scott, who caused that fumble where Notre Dame lost the Miami game, he's from Chicago. They should have gotten him. But back then, I think it came down more to NIL a couple of years ago. Notre Dame wasn't as big of a player as we mentioned for NIL and lost Justin to Miami. And I do think that that's – there's a couple of the great ones for the next couple of years in the Chicago area too. So I look for Notre Dame to spend a lot of time there, and perhaps they can break that ceiling, get involved with Chicago area players once again. Because when they do, they usually win national titles.
Well, we have a question from Matt McCarthy on that very subject. Does Tom think ND will have more success in Chicago in the 2027 class, especially with the Mount Carmel kids and Braden Parks?
Braden Parks, Brank's also got two teammates Notre Dame's offered, a brother Rice. I think there's 10 players just with those two schools I think Notre Dame's offered. I think Marcus has to get involved in Chicago a little bit more. And I think if he does, they're going to land these good number of these ball players. Al Washington, you know, is the D-line coach. They got some great talent in the area. But I think Marcus should probably get involved in Chicago. It's not that far away. And I do think that, and I'm not sure how much he gets involved during the season, but I do know that when I knew Nick Saban and Urban Meyer and Pete Carroll, they always got involved. They always had a group of like 25 guys they recruited. They talked to every week. A quick story. I was sitting with Leonard Fournette and his coach at St. Augustine in New Orleans a few years ago now. And he was finished with his sophomore year and we were watching his film. But during the hour and a half I was there, Nick Saban called from Alabama. Lane Kiffin called from USC and Les Miles called from LSU, called the coach and told the coach, don't forget his time is Friday at 7 p.m. and we got to talk to him and all that. And they developed that relationship as sophomores. And guess what? They were the finalists, the three final schools 2 years later for Leonard Fournette because they had worked on it for 2 years. And a lot of times that's what it takes to get the impact players. And that's why all three of them won national titles, because they got very involved during the season and during the offseason talking to the elite, the five-star ball players. And I think if Marcus does that, I think Notre Dame will be winning a couple of national titles.
So Tom has a photo shoot in May every year in Chicago, and he actually let me come over and hang out in the rain, although I was inside, and got to interview a bunch of those players. A lot of them are either strongly considering Notre Dame or have committed to Notre Dame. Braden Parks was one. Bone Crusher was one. But I love Bone Crusher's answer. I said, have you actually ever crushed a bone? And he goes, yes, sir, I have. So I love that answer. So we're going to go to, let's get this one up. Okay, I already got that one. Okay, here we go. From Justin, does Endy have any 2027 quarterbacks in mind if Teddy reclassifies? Now, this is new for today, so I'm not sure we've had a whole lot of time to process, but is there an uncommitted 2027 guy that you think would be a good fit? Should Notre Dame even recruit a guy in that class? I would imagine so. just because of how often quarterbacks transfer.
You know, if you remember how long it took them to offer a guy, they only offered a couple of quarterbacks this year because I don't think Geno was sold on it. It's not a great year for quarterbacks anyway, 2027. There'll definitely be somebody out there because even if he's committed elsewhere and Notre Dame comes after him, they should zoom in on him. I was hoping Notre Dame would have gone after Tommy Carr this past year, CJ's brother, because I think he's a five-star potential quarterback who's now, at the time, Miami of Ohio. Now he's switched to Michigan, so it's a little too late. But there's always quarterbacks out there that you go after if Teddy goes to this class, because they'll definitely want to bring in someone for 2027. And Notre Dame will find the right guy. Although, as I said, it took him a while to get down to Teddy, because I don't think there's anybody they felt like they should have pulled the trigger on. I thought maybe Israel Adams.
Oh, yeah.
Or guys like that. Taylor from the Chicago area also, who's committed, I think, to Nebraska.
Israel committed somewhere?
No, he's not committed anywhere. And
on our podcast, too.
Exactly.
Over in Chicago.
And he's got big-time talent, too. So there's enough guys out there for Notre Dame to find someone else if he does reclassify to 2027.
Yeah, we're going to prioritize these questions. We're going to hit the super chat one real quick. This isn't a recruiting question, but you can answer it, Tom, if you really want to. What happens with Miami if Duke wins the ACC championship? Does the committee leave out the ACC champion, put Miami in? We're just doing this one here, then we're going to get back to recruiting. They do not have to put Miami in. The ACC, if Duke wins the ACC championship, and James Madison wins their conference, and then James Madison would get in the field as a conference champion, and so would the champion of the American Athletic Conference, which is the winner of the North Texas Tulane game. So the ACC would be out. Now, could they put Miami in as an at-large team? Sure, if they get to that cut line, which right now is sitting at number 10, that Notre Dame would have to be bumped for Miami to get into the field. You really need Alabama and BYU to lose and the committee to think neither of them are worthy of being in the field, or you would have to think, well, suddenly we think Miami's better than Notre Dame, which I don't think is going to happen, but wanted to get that one taken care of here.
Well, you know, Eric, I think that these people, there's a lot of people that are anti-Notre Dame nationally. I've always seen that all these years. I've done it. You know, I don't know if it's because they're considered the college version of Dallas Cowboys or New York Yankees, or some people just don't like Catholics and they represent Catholicism to some people. I actually believe that, watching them both play, Notre Dame right now is better than Miami. And they say, well, the head-to-head, it didn't help Notre Dame when they had the head-to-head in 1993 when they beat Florida State second to last game of the season. And they both wound up with 12-1 records and both won their bowl games. And they gave Florida State the national title over Notre Dame, even though it was a late head-to-head combat. Notre Dame won it. So I don't know how much head-to-head means anymore.
Okay. We're going to move off of head-to-head and get back to recruiting. And this is from Matt McCarthy. Tom, is there any prospect that ND was seriously in the mix for in the 2026 class that you wish they could have landed? For me, it's Noah Clark, the defensive tackle out of North Carolina.
Yeah, Noah was like 330, 340 when I saw him, so I could see that. Notre Dame needs – their defensive tackles look like they've been on Slim Fast too long. You need 330-pound guys in that middle just to stop it. And Notre Dame hasn't had that in a while, maybe since Lewis Nix. Clark could have. I thought, you know, he's not a great player, but he's a very good one. And I think that with his bulk, that's something that they definitely need that they haven't had in a long time as a defense. I mean, Hinnish is good. Robio is good. But I think they need these, you know, Buddha-type defensive tackle prospects sometimes. Really,
like Lewis Nix?
Like Lewis Nix. And the Bone Crusher is already. Guys like that. And I think that's what they need more for instead of these very slim defensive tackles that are coming into Notre Dame. And I think that's why they have not proven themselves as pass rushers yet. When you watch Notre Dame, they look good against teams that are not inferior talent-wise. But when they played USC and when they played Miami and when they played Texas A&M, their pass rush did not look that great. So if they do get in the playoffs, You got to worry about the kicking game, and you got to worry about the pass rush. And if they can handle both of them, then Notre Dame could go a long way.
I just wanted to make sure that you saw, Tom, I have my Pete Chiavarelli coffee mug, my coffee out of. So there we go. And Pete was on our podcast too. This question, I don't know how involved you get with the kickers, but let's take this one from Terry Howie. Question, Tom, how would you fix the Irish place kicking debacle? Who in high school is available? Do you deal much with the kickers, Tom?
Not much, but Schmidt, I did have him. He came to my Wisconsin get together last year. He was a solid, very much the best kicker in Wisconsin. But how I would handle it is easy for Notre Dame, I think, if they're doing their job with the transfer portal, because there's got to be kickers everywhere that go around, you know, you can just go around the country that would die to come to Notre Dame. Right. Guys, great kickers at smaller schools or even smaller, you know, programs that could even be smaller division Power Four schools that want to transfer, want to get to a school. If you do your homework, you're going to come up with a great one every year, like most of the schools do. And I just think that the special teams coach should spend most of his time now going out there looking for a great kicker that looks like he's going to be entering the transfer portal. And I think Notre Dame's got enough people in place to know that and know which ones they seem to zoom in on. So I think it'll be taken care of by next year. Unfortunately, this year it's a major problem and a problem that could keep them from advancing pretty far into the playoffs.
Yeah, what I'll say to you, Terry, too, is that, you know, not every kicker that comes in as a freshman, usually Justin Yoon's don't happen very often where they come in and they get used to the faster operation and the kicking off a tee versus not kicking off a tee. They get used to all the different changes. Usually takes a year. If you remember, Jonathan Dorr was a really good kicker at Notre Dame, but it took him 2 or 3 years to get to that point. Justin Yoon walked in the door, was kicking great. And they feel like Eric Schmidt will eventually be that kind of kicker. So I would look for him to be pretty good next year. But I do think Tom's right. I think they're going to go to the portal and have two options because Eric Schmidt can also punt, and he may be the starting punter at some point. Okay, we're going to go to Beef Eater again. Did USC get a higher ranking just because of the sheer number of recruits? Was the quality there also, Tom?
Both. The quality was there. I think they got like 9 defensive linemen coming in. Chad Bowden did a great job after he left Notre Dame, went to USC. You can see he's probably worth his weight. And the money they're paying him right now is worth it because he did a great job. But it is numbers, too. I think Notre Dame, if you took the top 27 each school, Notre Dame might slightly be ahead of USC. So I do think that played a part. And numbers do. You got 35, 36 players coming in, and all of them are big time. Yes, USC deserved number one because of numbers, but also because of talent.
Okay, we are going to go to Cameron Crazy, 818. Not ND specific, but which player coming out of high school in the last 20 years was the biggest disappointment in college? I'd say Daryl Scott, the running back from St. Bonaventure who went to Colorado. I never even heard of him, so he's a disappointment for me. Who would be a big bust for you? Do you even do that, Tom?
I had my camera crew come out. We did summer school specials at CBS, and Daryl Scott was the one we zoomed in on out in Los Angeles, and real nice kid. We filmed with him in front of the Coliseum, and we went to a restaurant with him, and we built him up like everything, and he was supposed to be the next Heisman Trophy candidate at Colorado, and it just didn't pan out. So I don't know. I don't like to talk too much about guys that didn't make it because there's always a ton of them. Like you said, when I was starting with the 5 stars back in Peyton Manning's year, like 92, and there's a lot of guys that didn't make it 5-star-wise, and there's a lot of reasons why. It could be academics, could be injuries, which play a big part, social problems. Notre Dame had a great All-American potential named Aaron Lynch who had some social problems or girlfriend problems and left Notre Dame after 1 year, or else he could have been a great player at Notre Dame. He was better than Stephon Tuitt that year, if you remember, and took off. There's a lot of reasons why guys don't pan out, or they've reached their limit as a high school senior. Maybe when it comes to weightlifting, they're not going to grow anymore. They're not developing anymore. There's a lot of reasons why, but there's a good number of ball players. I didn't want to mention any ones. I have a couple in mind that didn't, but I'd rather not mention them.
Okay. Well, you've never been a disappointment, Tom. This we have somebody that says Tillery was a 5-star. I think he was a 4-star by all the recruiting services I saw, and he was an offensive line prospect that late in the cycle he agreed, okay, I'm coming as a defensive lineman. Now, he ended up being a first-team All-American. Where did you have Tillery ranked? Did you have him as a 4 or 5-star?
Well, let me tell you, I'm the one that Notre Dame about him. Back that year, he came from Shreveport. Every year, Sean Payton and Greg McMahon with the Saints let me use their facilities, and I would get all the top players in Pennsylvania together. It went on for like 10 years. And then Sean would talk to him. Sean was one of my 1980 All-Americans coming out of the Chicago area, Naperville Central, as a quarterback. So I got to know Sean, and a good guy. We had all the kids come down. His mom, Tillery's mom, drove him down to New Orleans. That's a long drive from Shreveport, I would imagine, 4 or 5 hours. And we get down there, and we're talking, and the mom mentioned to me that he was an offensive lineman, by the way, at the time. Played sparingly as a sophomore, as a defensive lineman. And so the mom mentioned to me, oh, we'd really love to hear from Notre Dame. So then I called Harry Heistad and told him about it as an offensive lineman. Notre Dame immediately started recruiting him. They got involved, and I think later Jerry wanted to be switched to defense, and that's how they wound up with him on defensive line. One of the few, Eric Parsegian used to do that all the time. Mike Kadish, another All-American Notre Dame, came as an offensive lineman and became an All-American defensive tackle. So there's the president was sent, I thought, with Era, doing that all the time. And you didn't see a whole lot of it with Brian Kelly, but they did do it with Jerry Tillery.
The funny Tillery story for me was I was on the radio talking about Tillery and being an All-American in college at defensive line. And I said, I wonder if Harry Heistad thinks that Jerry would have been an All-American had he stayed at offensive line. And I got a text like 2 minutes later from Harry saying, yeah, I do think he would have.
He was, and like I said, I called Harry about him. Notre Dame didn't know anything about him. I told Harry, and Harry immediately started recruiting him. And then somehow, and I don't know the process, but somehow they wound up switching him to defensive line, and it worked out. He's still playing.
Well, they needed defense. They needed desperately interior defensive linemen in that class.
Just like now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really, really bad. If you remember, when Tillery came in, Notre Dame had Jerron Jones and nothing else in the middle, and they were dead last in the Power Four. I know Power Five at the time, and people go, well, Notre Dame's not in a conference. The NCAA and everybody else considers Notre Dame a Power Five team when they classify them as different things, including the playoff and so forth. But they were dead last in sacks among defensive linemen that year. Okay, let's go to our next question, which is, how are the 2026 linebackers? William wants to know.
I think they're both pretty good. Clapper had a real good year, as did Thomas Davis. And I like the fact that they're recruiting guys that are very productive in high school. There used to be a time when Notre Dame, they constantly brought, we got to have length, got to have length. That's why they didn't really pursue Aaron Donald. And I don't know whatever happened to Aaron Donald, but they didn't pursue him hard because he didn't have length. He's 5'11 and a half. The two linebackers that they got committed for next year, Irvin and McCaskin, are both 6 foot or a little bit under 6 foot, as is Thomas Davis. So, but these guys are super productive. You can put them inside. They'll wind up weighing between 230 and 240 in college. And these guys can run. They can run with the backs. They can cover sometimes wide receivers coming out, but definitely tight ends or the running backs coming out of the backfield. So I think they're quality all-around linebacker, three-down linebacker types too. So they've done very well with linebackers. And you got to give Al Golden a lot of credit in the past. And then this year, they didn't drop off much at all, too. I know Al Golden had recruited Asa and Madden Faremo, and didn't look like there's much of a drop-off talent-wise with these two guys coming in.
Speaking of linebackers, just curious, in the last class, I mean, we know Madden Faremo jumped to the top of that class, and he's in the rotation. Anthony Sacco was also in that class. He hasn't even gotten into a game yet, I don't think. And there's talk that he might end up being a defensive end. What's your assessment of Anthony Sacco?
I always thought he would be a defensive end. And I saw, you know, his dad, Tony, was one of my All-Americans years ago. And I this kid was big at St. Joseph when he came over. I was saying, geez, he looks like a defensive end already. I think he could be 6'4", 270 if he wanted to be. Reminds me of how you got to kind of keep your weight down. Chris Zorich had that problem when he was a linebacker at Notre Dame. And finally, they told him, no, you can gain weight and maybe we'll put you on the nose. And he went from 230 to 270, I think, in 10 minutes. So he started eating again. I think same thing with Sacco. Sacco's a very talented ball player, very talented. And they definitely have to find room for him. And as I said before, they've always had great linebackers at Notre Dame in the past few years. But guys like that, they've moved a couple of them to defensive line already. So why not him?
Okay, we're going to go to Matt McCarthy again. Tom, since ND made the national championship last year, do they get brought up a lot more as a school than high school prospects are interested in when you're visiting? So did the national championship run boost their profile, in your opinion?
And early on, I'm seeing, like now, I'm seeing guys for 27, 28, and 29. And I was thinking, no. But the reason is Notre Dame wasn't working on the next classes. They start a little bit later than everyone else. I don't know what the reason is. They're really making sure the 26 class is going to be great. So they got behind, I thought, on the 27 players, but they're catching up now. And now the kids are starting to mention them. But a lot of times when I get there, they have no mention of Notre Dame at all because they're only mentioning the schools that are actually dealing with them at the time. And as I said, Notre Dame did not seem to get on early. Even with the players for 2028 now that I'm seeing, rarely do you see any of them mention Notre Dame because Notre Dame has not really zoomed in on them yet. And they have, contact would be talking to the coach and making sure that get everything out to them mailing-wise and then maybe having the ball player call them. But Notre Dame does not seem to be doing that with a whole lot of the 2028 players as of yet. So they're a little bit harder to diagnose than some of the other schools, like a USC, who's on 29 guys by now, 2029. And Penn State was like that under James Franklin. It made no sense why they fired him because he was a tremendous recruiter. And you see a lot of – I can tell you the schools that always seem to get a great jump on players. Notre Dame's not one of them.
Okay. We're going to go to Terry Howie. Question. Tom, will Brian, I'm sure he means Brian Kelly, resurface, or do you think he will take his buyout and ride into the sunset? And Terry says, by the way, I despise him. So what's your take? And then I'll throw my two cents in as well.
You know, I always liked Brian. I thought, you know, more of a businessman. He wasn't, you know, but he wasn't a bad guy. I know Notre Dame fans despise him because he left Notre Dame. Here's an Irish Catholic guy leaving Notre Dame for the big bucks at LSU. But again, he's not a bad guy. He's just, I always thought that, and I think I told you this before, but, and I did this on the air once when we were doing a live show with Rick Neuheisel, and I said, just to tease him, I said, show me a coach who's a prolific golfer and I'll show you a lousy recruiter. And our next guest was Steve Spurrier coming up on the radio. We're going to have on the phone. And he thought I was talking about him because he was at the time, the poster boy for golfing and not recruiting. But Lou Holtz was like that. Vinny Serrato did all the work. Coach Holtz was a great closer, but the problem was to the players' houses because he didn't like it. He'd rather golf than that. And Brian Kelly and Tyrone Willingham were golfers instead of recruiters. And that's part of the reason why they've suffered over the past 30 years when not winning a national title. I think if you get a coach now like Marcus, who I don't even know if Marcus golfs, but I do know that he's got the recruiting acumen to be a great recruiter. And he's obviously done a good job as a coach. So I do think Notre Dame's future is bright because of Marcus Freeman. As long as he's realizes that recruiting is the backbone of any successful football team, you've got to constantly be out there. And as I mentioned before, and all these guys that told me this, either at lunches or talking to like Urban Meyer or Nick Saban or Pete Carroll, and Mack Brown and Phil Fulmer, the great recruiters, you always win with impact players, no matter how good of a coach you are. Nick Saban proved that at Michigan State. He didn't have the impact players until he got to LSU. And Pete Carroll, the same thing at USC. you got to be one of the Super 16 teams, which Notre Dame is. But if you're relying on Notre Dame, their reputation and their history of recruiting, you're always going to get good players, but not the great ones. And that's what happened with the previous three coaches. They just did not, or four actually, previous four coaches. They did not understand Notre Dame, did not understand what it takes to win a national title. And again, one time Taylor Bell of the Chicago Sun-Times and I did a survey, this is 25 years ago. We asked the top 100 players several questions, but one of them is, what state is Notre Dame in? And less than 50% knew Notre Dame was in Indiana. So that's what I mean. They have to be told about Notre Dame's history and their greatness academically, athletically, socially, just about everything. They have to be told that. But if they're not told that until all the other schools have already gotten their 2 cents in about themselves, then Notre Dame's out of the picture. And that was the way it was for 30 straight years.
When I started this show, I had this agenda and I thought we'd take some questions. I'm having so much fun with the questions and they're so high quality. So keep them coming. We're letting you guys hijack the show. And this question I don't get, but maybe you do, Tom. This is from Matt. Does Peyton Manning still give you some good natured ribbing about Josh Booty?
That was Eli Manning. And I was a guest a year or so ago on Eli Manning's show on ESPN. And it was about the star system. I gave Peyton, the very first year I did five stars was Peyton Manning, 1992. And then a couple of years later when Eli came out, I gave him four stars. And then on the show, he was showing me clips of guys that I ranked ahead of him. Some made the NFL, but none of them were really, they were all kind of minor players when it came to being quarterbacks. And so he was giving me the ribbing. It was a scripted show. Eli is a real good guy and obviously turned out to be a five-star quarterback. And I was wrong on that one too. So, but all the other guys, and one of them was Josh, but actually Josh was Peyton's year, and that was part of it. I was doing a show on ESPN, and we fly the top 25 guys at Disney World. And Josh, I was bringing two quarterbacks, Peyton Manning, who I gave the Washington D.C. Touchdown Club Award to that year. I split things up, but I gave Josh Booty the USA Today Player of the Year Award, and I think Peyton was upset about that. So 10 years later, I'm walking into the Manning camp in Louisiana with Buddy Tevens, the late great Buddy Tevens.
Okay.
Who was running the camp. And I had my son with me. He was like 6, 7 years old. We walk in the cafeteria. It's only Archie and Peyton sitting there. So I come in, I say, hey guys, how's it going? And Peyton goes, hey, how's your friend Josh Booty doing? Now, now Peyton's all pro with the Colts. Josh is off with the Florida Marlins for a while, played Major League Baseball. And Peyton still remembered that I had Josh as the USA Today, and Peyton was the number two quarterback on that team, and he never forgave me for that.
Okay, follow-up from me. Is Arch Manning better, worse, or about what you thought he'd be in college?
What I thought he'd be. He's a very good quarterback. He's developing still. You know, playing down at Isidore Newman in New Orleans, competition is like the lower division, and he was a man among boys there, but he's got the height. He's 6'4", 6'5". He's got a great arm. He can run himself out of trouble. He's developing into a very good quarterback. He still, I think, has two more years left because he redshirted that first year, I think, or at least he got the redshirt in, I hope. And I think he'll be a number one draft choice, too. So he's taken a lot of hits. And it seems like when you're on the internet, what do they call the internet? You know, the people with
trolls.
Yeah, trolls or an internet muscles. They follow people, bad mouthing them constantly. As Charles Barkley says, sitting in their mother's basement with crumbs on their stomach, eating while they're making fun of everybody else. And I think that seems to be what they're doing with Manning. He's a great kid. Really enjoy. I spent a lot of time with him a couple of years in a row, and I was really impressed with him as a person and as a quality individual. And a guy that studies a lot of film like his uncle Peyton did. And I think in the long run, he's going to turn out to be a real good one.
Well, if I lived in my mom's basement, I would have crumbs on my stomach. She's a good cook. Let's see.
But you're kind-hearted, Eric, so you don't have to.
Well, thank you. So we have our next question is from Matt. Is Devin Fitzgerald severely underrated? His production this year was top-notch. What's your thoughts on wide receiver Devin Fitzgerald?
I gave him 4 stars, so I'm not, he's not underrated. And, you know, his dad, Larry, another story, I would go up during my national travels. Larry's dad and Devin's grandfather had a radio show, and I'd go up into the show when Larry was running around the studio as a little kid. So how long I've been doing this. And Larry was a great kid. But also, Larry, I think, had academic problems, went to Pitt. He was a smart kid, but I think there's something with the I don't remember. But at the time, too, Larry had those doubts because he's not a 4-4 guy, just like Devin. But they both have great hands. They've got great body control. They've got great instincts as wide receivers, run precise routes. They do everything right. And Devin's going to be a fixture at Notre Dame for the next 3-4 years. I think he's got big-time ability. And as I said, I gave him 4 stars, so he's not underrated.
Okay, let's go with this one. Question, Tom, if you were to take director of recruiting job, what school would be your number one choice? Can you say that? Can you?
Yeah, whoever paid me the most, Eric.
Okay.
Like Chad Bowden, I'd be a hired recruiting gun, but I would say, you know, where I would go is somebody the head coach that I could work with. That would be it. And I have been offered a couple of times over the years, and I don't know if it was just someone placating me and saying, hey, you know, trying to kiss up, or someone was actually offering it. But I would say that I would go with someone that could. That I could work with. And there's a lot of head coaches you can't work with. Some of these guys' egos are through the roof to begin with. And I also like complete autonomy when I was doing my stuff and all that, because I think, you know, no one outworks me on anything. And I would think that I would be able to make sure I get my 2 cents in. I know how the hierarchy of a recruiting staff works. You know, you go, head coach is the closer, but the assistant coaches are the ones that decide who they want at their position. I wouldn't mind that, but as long as they gave me a clear-cut view of who they wanted and what they're going after, I think that would be great, and I could work with them.
Okay, we're going to go to Beefeater's question here for Tom. Tom hits 48 states a year. What are the top 3 restaurants / foods Tom will always stop during his travels?
Cracker Barrel.
Is that right? Is that the staple?
Last year on Thanksgiving, I was out filming, and I had to go to Cracker Barrel in Chattanooga across from my hotel, and I loved it. They had a great Thanksgiving dinner, and I love their Christmas ornaments and everything else. It's a very festive restaurant. So no September, if I'm on the road and I'm not having dinner with a coach or somebody, I'm eating while I drive. So my restaurant would be my car, and I'll stop at a gas station. If they got a McDonald's or Burger King or sandwich place, I would get that, so I don't have to lose time, because I average 500 miles a day driving, and then I also got to stop to do interviews along the way, so it's quite a chore. So I don't have time, the luxury of stopping at restaurants. I have to eat while I drive.
And Tom is sitting in a Wendy's parking lot right now, for the record.
I didn't go to Wendy's, but I had to stop here so we could do this.
Okay. You're trying to make Tom older than he is, but I'll let him answer this. Tom, did you see, this is from Joe, did you see Joe Theismann when he was in high school? And he was Joe Theismann when he was in high school. He changed his name.
How old do they think I am, Eric? No. I was with Joe. I came to the USC game. Joe and I were talking. He's a wonderful guy. Joe, he's got a great mind. You can tell. I did a show with Joe Gibbs a few years ago in Charlotte. And he talked about Joe Theismann, how he processes things so quickly. And he's a coach on the field, because he's had 3 different quarterbacks win Super Bowls for him. But he talked about how quick Joe's mind is, how fast of a talker, how great of a leader he was, and just a lot of great things about Joe Theismann. I had breakfast with Terry Hanratty this spring, and same thing happened. You know, Terry just made the College Hall of Fame, which mind-boggling to me, because I thought he was already in it, the guy with, but his history. But Terry's the same way. These quarterbacks, they got great minds. Now, Tommy Clements used to come to my house to watch film. The quietest guy I ever ran into. And he won a national title for Notre Dame. And he was coaching at Notre Dame at the time. And him and Dave Roberts came to the house to watch film. And I don't remember him saying more than 2 words. He was a very pleasant, nice guy, but he didn't talk. And but also, Eric Parsegian told me he was one of the real brilliant quarterbacks that he'd had at Notre Dame. Real smart guy. So sometimes you don't have to talk to be smart. I'm proof of that. I'm not, I talk too much. I think Tommy Clements was the same thing. So I got to know a lot of their quarterback. Jimmy Clausen, the same thing. Brady Quinn, the same thing. These guys process things very much quicker than the average football player.
Yeah, CJ Carr, same thing.
Exactly.
I'll follow up with you on Clements. We had Frank Pomerico on our pregame radio show last week, and he's a big proponent of Tommy. And, you know, Clements' name popped up a couple times for Notre Dame's head coaching job. He didn't get it. Charlie Weiss was one of those times. Do you think him being so reserved was the reason why he wasn't taken maybe more seriously?
He was one of the finalists when Bob Davey got the job.
Yeah.
Boggling to me that Bob Davey would have gotten that job at Notre Dame, because he didn't recruit anybody for 2 years at Notre Dame. He was looking for a job at UCLA, at Oklahoma, and I know that for a fact because he asked me to call the ADs for him. It was Jerry DiNardo, who I think at the time may have been divorced, and you know how Notre Dame was back in those days, and Tommy Clements and Bob Davey, and Davey is the one that got pushed through by people on campus, pushed Lou Holtz out in my mind also. So a lot of things were happening early to late 90s at Notre Dame that weren't good for the program. I think there's a lot of people at Notre Dame that are jealous of the Notre Dame success, thinking that we could do without football, not realizing that if it wasn't for football, Notre Dame would just be another normal Catholic college in the Midwest, like some of the other ones, like DePaul or schools like that. Football really helped Notre Dame 120 years ago become the Notre Dame that it is today. But a lot of people at Notre Dame are jealous of that and are constantly looking for ways to thwart the football program and make it maybe not the colossus it is.
Okay, Tom, this is from, I got a lot of favorite people that I've met since I've been on YouTube. This is one of my absolute favorites, Rajon. He lives up in Massachusetts. Rajon says, are some coach is good at recruiting one side of the ball and not the other. I'm thinking of Charlie Weiss.
Exactly. Charlie was a good recruiter too. The kids all liked him. He was very good at, you know, not only promoting Notre Dame since he was a grad. I think Charlie had the perfect test score at Notre Dame too. He's a brilliant.
Yes, he did.
36 and a 1600. And I reached 1600, but when they compile all three times I took it. He brilliant, but I do think that he kind of let the defense go. He did get Manti Te'o, and I think Charlie had a lot to do with that also, along with Brian Pullian. But the fact is, their defense really suffered, I thought, a lot when it came down to defensive players. And that's the reason why Charlie lacked success, because the offense was always good. Even Brady Quinn, Clausen, after his first year, was very good. But I don't think that they had – equal amount of talent on the defensive side of the ball. That's why they were good, but not great.
Okay. I'm going to go here to Matt McCarthy. Tom, how would you rate Ebenezer Iwatade and Rodney Dunham, the two defensive ends in the class?
Right now, I give them both 4-star plus. I know someone's got Rodney as 5-star. And they both have that potential, but Ebenezer might have more potential. He's skinny. He looked like a wide receiver when I saw him this past winter. I said, well, how much you weigh? He said at the time he weighed 210, and I think he's like 220 now. He's got a great frame, so he could get up there, and I think his quick feet could make him an outstanding pass rusher. Dunham is already a good pass rusher at times, but once he becomes more consistent, then he will be a 5-star player. But I don't see that consistency in him in every game. And but Ebenezer, they both have unlimited potential. They could be the guys that Notre Dame looking for, but they're not a Ross Browner who came in as a 5-star defensive end back in 73 and immediately became one at Notre Dame too, a 5-star college defensive end. They don't have too many of those at Notre Dame, but he's definitely, these two guys are definitely two that could become outstanding pass rushers.
I love this name. Even if it hadn't been a wonderful question, I would have taken it anyways. Bitten by the party animal. Tom's car is beeping at him. How well do kids grasp the concept of being one of the best in the country? Are there kids that don't understand how good they are?
Yeah, there are. You know who one was? Chris Zorich in high school, the most humble kid I've ever seen coming out of high school. And I thought he came from a military background. He was so humble and polite and everything, and had no idea he was even a Division I player at the time. But there are a lot of the guys like that. And a lot of the kids, if they're from a big city, then no, they're almost always realizing they're great. If they have parents that live their life through their kids, then they're going to know they're great since they're 5 years old. But I run into quite a few players that kind of shocked that we have them as a 4 or 5 star ball player. And then they're, you know, really appreciative and will even work harder. So it's all kinds of players when you travel the whole country. I like to see every one of the top 500 players in person. And I'll see, I would say 75% of the top 1,000 guys in person also. So that's why traveling is important. And you can sit down and talk to the ball player. And I think while that's more important than just calling kids on the phone or going to combines, we don't even know which guys are which because they all have, there's 600 guys with different numbers. I think talking to them, not only seeing that they're the size that they say they are, but also when you talk to them, see if they have the heart that really wants to make them a better ball player, and that earning a scholarship is not a means to an end, but something that they really want to project themselves, not only as, you know, when they get to college, be good students, but also be great players and have NFL aspirations. Some ball players kind of get by on their just enormous talent in high school, but don't have that work ethic to really progress and become great players in college. I've seen great high school players that could have been great players in college, but the work ethic was lacking, and they always fell short of their goal.
I'm going to take this one. It's not a recruiting question, but I have a recruiting follow-up on it. Question of college football in general is, if the SEC always gets 9 teams in the preseason top 25 and they beat each other for good wins and good losses, how will we ever know when the conference is down? I'm going to ask Tom a recruiting question related to this, but where you can gauge it is how they do outside of their conference and how many teams they play outside of their conference that are top 25 teams. The ACC, in part because they play Notre Dame 5 times, played 13 top 25 teams outside their conference. The SEC and the Big Ten played 7, and the Big 12 played 3. The Big 12, and I'm talking AP top 25 just to be consistent here, the Big 12 lost all of those games. The SEC was 3-4, the Big Ten was 1-6, and the ACC was 3-10. So you can see 3-4 is a pretty good record against outside competition. So that gives you some self-correction. But Tom, my question for you is, as you go around and see these recruits, does the SEC in recruiting back up the SEC in the polls? Like, do most of the great recruits end up in the SEC, or is it more evenly distributed than what shows up in the rankings, for example?
Until a couple of years ago, it was definitely dominant, the SEC, when it came to the best players. Now with NIL money, it's pretty well averaging out between the Big Ten and the Southeast Conference for the majority of, and Notre Dame. And then the ACC would probably fall in behind those two. So it's getting the top talent is more equally distributed, mainly because of NIL money now. And
right,
kids are going that and not realizing a lot of times they grew up as a fan favorite of a certain school, but that school's not going to give them as much as, say, an out-of-state school. Believe me, they're gone in a second. Money is the number one thing right now when it comes to recruiting, not education, not closeness to home, and not familiarity with the staff. It's all NIL money would be the number one reason why a lot of these ball players are making decisions.
Okay, we're going to take probably one or two more, but I wanted to ask you really quickly before we got to those, are you looking, I mean, do you look at this class and say, oh gosh, Notre Dame got a lot of what they needed, but I know that they're going to get some transfer portal guys, but what do you think in terms of positions? Is there anything that jumps out at you that they need out of the portal in January?
I still would say defensive tackles.
Okay.
End's coming now, and then they got Hola and Golden for next year, but who knows if they're going to be ready. And I think they're real weak at that position anyway, and I think that could be one of the reasons why they maybe not getting that great pass rush. So I do think that defensive tackle and kicker would be the ones that stand out the most. I don't see maybe another great wide receiver like Fields. Malachi would become a big-time guy. Because, again, if you get one or two of the freshmen that really do well, that's great. But you can't count on them yet. And I would say getting an established wide receiver for C.J. Carr is very important. Tight end-wise, they always seem to have tight ends that are ready to come in and take the place of whoever's leaving.
And then quickly, what's your thoughts about the start that Notre Dame's gotten in the 2027 class? They have seven commitments. They've had a lot of guys visit during the fall. What's your thought about where the 2027 momentum is?
If you had asked me that 3 months ago, I would say they're way behind, but they've caught up a little bit and they're doing a good job. I think they could probably still offer a few more guys for 2027 because they're going to lose a lot of the guys that they have offered. I always think it's a matter of just zooming in on the right guys and getting that offer out there quickly. Notre Dame sometimes have trouble pulling the trigger early. And a lot of times now, too, when you talk to ball players, they'll always mention the first couple of schools that offer them. They seem to have a soft spot in their heart for them. And then Notre Dame not really having much local talent in northern Indiana. Chicago should be their local area, but it's not. So they've got to, I think, get scholarship. Like USC, Chad, as soon as he got USC, they've offered a ton of 2028 players already, many, many players. And I like that way about it. So I think if Notre Dame did that a little bit more, I can't see them not having great years every single year because they got everything in place now to build up a great team, be among Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia when it comes to the perennial great teams, and then win a national title or two over the next 10 years.
Okay, Tom's probably smelling the French fries from Wendy's and getting hungry, so let's take two more. We're going to go with Joe Long. Okay, Tom, who do you think are the best two running backs to play together at Notre Dame? And who, in your opinion, are the best two running backs to play at Notre Dame during your time of following them?
Love and Price. Or maybe, what was that? A couple of backfields. I was not alive, but Johnny Lattner was telling me. Was it Neil Warden? And they had two really good running backs with them. Called the greatest backfield ever at Notre Dame. Ralph Guglielmi was their quarterback. Well, Johnny Lattner and Neil Warden. Okay. You got one as a Heisman Trophy winner, another one who was perennial NFL player too. So I would say that one. There's also one with George Gipp in 1920. And the other guy I ran into when I was about 22 years old, I went to visit him. He was a lawyer in Chicago and his son was running the law. He was like close to 90 years old and still running was still working as a lawyer, but he was the backmate with George Gipp in 1920. A side note to that, one of my heroes of the Cubs, Rig Stevenson, who played for the Cubs from 25 to 35, has a .331 lifetime batting average, but not in the Hall of Fame, was also on that Walter Camp All-America team or backfield with George Gipp, Rig Stevenson. But there was no NFL, so he left Alabama after that, went to the Cleveland Indians. The Cubs got him, and he played 10, 11 years with the Cubs and was the left fielder when Babe Ruth called his shot, left fielder when the Cubs won the pennants of 29. 32 and 35. So a little history there too of running backs, great backfields. But I don't think anything compares to these two guys. I know Warden and Lattner were good, but Love and Price, the most exciting backfield Notre Dame's had in at least 70 years.
Yeah. I joked to a young reporter that I met at the beginning of the season that I had covered Rockne and she believed me. So maybe I should have told her I covered the Four Horsemen. I was in this market when Holtz had a lot of good running backs overlap, you know, Bettis Brooks, Culver, both Brookses. And I'm leaving a whole bunch of people out. Rocket, Ransom, Waters,
Dorsey
Levens. Yeah. There were a lot of good, but they usually weren't like used in tandem quite as much as these guys are. I think Jeremiah Love will be a first team All-American, and I have a vote on the All-America team, the AP All-American team, and I am actually going to put Jadarian Price as a second teamer for the all-purpose position. He's the number one kickoff returner in the country. He rushed for 700 yards. He catches the ball. I think he's earned that. And I'm not doing it just because he's a Notre Dame guy. I know about him because he's a Notre Dame guy, but he will make my All-America ballot. So I think I promised one more question, and that is going to be from this guy. And it's, with only a few players enrolling in June, when will January be considered regular enrolling instead of early enrolling and the June guys becoming late enrollees? Yeah, it's 24 out of 27. Boy, how things changed. Charlie Weiss was the first coach that got the early enrollees pushed through. There were three of them that year. I think it was George West, Chris Stewart, and maybe James Aldridge. I might be getting the third person wrong, but it was three of them. What do you think about Notre Dame getting 24 early enrollees? And is that really going to be the norm now? This is a record for Notre Dame. I think the old record was 15.
I think almost everyone's doing it. Matter of fact, you know, we have our U.S. Army game at the Star in Dallas coming up on the 21st of this month. And the reason we do it before Christmas is because of early enrollment. All these guys are going to be gone if we did the game in January. And I think that's why the other two games have their game in January. They have a lot of juniors on their team because of that. Even though some states won't allow juniors to play, we stay strictly with seniors. And the reason why we moved it from right after New Year's to before Christmas is because of just that. Too many midterm grads.
Okay. Tom, we really appreciate everything you've done today. We need to do this again. We had a great audience, great live audience. I'm sure we'll get great on replay. Tell people how they can find your content.
You know, for Twitter, just go to @LemmingReport. It was also the name of my TV show, @LemmingReport. And then if they like to get the magazine, which is 240 pages, I think you have one too, Eric.
They do.
Go to TomLemmingPrepFootball.com.
Okay. Well, everybody, I really appreciate the questions, the comments, the quips, and even the bribe, which got me to take a college football playoff question. I'm Eric Hance with BlueandGold.com. We got tons of content there. Tom told us where you can get his content. If you want to meet him in person, go to the Wendy's, wherever he is in Chicago. And we'll see you all next time on the Herd and Gold podcast. Thanks again, everybody.
Goodbye.